This is the SB Live Washington Podcast, your weekly conversation about high school sports and the people who play them across the Evergreen State. I'm Andy Bueller, reporter with SB Live, and your host. Bothell defensive lineman Gabe Johnson joins the podcast later on. Todd and I had the chance to get to know him, a really lively interview, so be sure to stick around for that. But with me now, the one, the only SB Live senior reporter, the prodigal son of Tacoma. Todd, are you everybody's pal this week, or are you nobody's pal?
I'm everybody's pal when it's 70 degrees and warmer, because that usually means I'm on a golf course or having lunch up at my favorite golf course. So right now it's a little blustery, a little cold for my taking. So right now I'm nobody's pal.
Hey, I got a quick question before we move on. I've never understood going to a golf course for lunch. If I'm going to go to a golf course, I want to play golf. I don't want to sit on the patio and look at other people play golf.
It's a work lunch, Dan.
Okay.
It's writing stories. It's not me going up and staring at people playing golf and me getting really angry about it. No, it's a work lunch.
Okay. Gotcha. That makes it a little bit easier to take, I guess.
How many of those work lunches are you expensing, Todd, is the real question.
No, that's between me and Barb Beach and you know,
and Expensify.
Yeah, and the Expensify software. Yeah.
Well, that's Todd Millis also here. The other voice you're hearing is SB Live's preeminent basketball mind, the host of the ISO podcast. And this week, after a tough loss in the national title game, I'd imagine a disappointed but proud Zag. He's Dan Dickow. Fellas, how we doing this week?
I'm great. You know, it's kind of it's a bittersweet time to be a Gonzaga alum, a basketball alum at GU. Talk about an unbelievable season. You know, Baylor was dominant that night. They played as well as anybody has played that I can remember in recent memory at the college level. They took the fight to Gonzaga. Gonzaga looked a little tired to start the game off after that huge emotional win where Suggs hit that 40-footer at the end of the overtime to win the game. You know, I think the biggest takeaway is this. If you would have told anybody on that team, anybody in the program, anybody that was a Gonzaga supporter or in college basketball, Gonzaga is going to be undefeated going into the championship game. Will you take it? They would take it in a second, in a heartbeat. Every team except for Baylor would switch places with the Gonzaga program and what they've accomplished this year. But I'll take it a step further. Every program outside of maybe Villanova, who's won two in like the last 5 or 6 years, Virginia, who won a tournament, North Carolina, who beat Gonzaga in the 2017 title game, and now Baylor, every other program in the country would switch places with Gonzaga over the last 6 years. Four Elite Eights in that time frame. They've been ranked number one, I believe, more than any other program in the last 5 years. The amount of All-Americans they've had, the guys that have been drafted in the NBA. Gonzaga basketball is at a level now that, quite frankly, is amazing. It's one of the – Jay Billis has said this on record multiple times. It's one of the greatest sports stories ever. And I'm right there with him to acknowledge that and agree with that. Yes, it's disappointing because everybody that follows Gonzaga has been a part of Gonzaga would love to see a championship on that resume. But people don't understand how difficult it is for a season to culminate in a championship. So they'll get there. They'll get one eventually. There's a good chance it's next year because, there's going to be some roster turnover. Some guys are going to go to the NBA. But some of the guys that they've got coming in, some of the guys that are on the short list of recruiting, they're going to keep Gonzaga at that level.
Yeah, I really liked what I heard from Corey after the national championship game, the way he approached the loss and facing adversity, a lot like what Tony Bennett did, a couple years ago when they lost to the 16 before winning the national championship. I kind of parallel those two. Dan, I'm curious, just now that we're a few days removed, you look at Corey's year, what kind of stands out above everything with him?
Well, I think Corey's really kind of cemented himself as one of the true kind of legends of the program for a number of different reasons. He's from the state of Washington. He came in as a highly regarded recruit, not a five-star McDonald's American, but a very good recruit. And he played minutes as a freshman. I think he averaged about 6 points a game. But his evolution and growth as a player is exactly what you love to see in a college basketball program. He got better every single year, to the point now as a senior, I mean, he's first team All-American, and people were talking about him as a National Player of the Year candidate. That doesn't happen if you don't buy into player development, if you don't buy into having the correct work ethic, if you don't buy into the culture and the things that Coach Few is teaching. So I think that's part of it. The other part of it is, you know, his leadership that he showed throughout this senior season was impeccable. You go from the disappointment last year of the COVID canceled NCAA tournament, bring new guys on campus, get them to buy in, get them to believe in Coach Few and his staff's message, as well as get them to believe in the players' message. Because Gonzaga has always been, as much credit as Coach Few gets, and he should get all the credit in the world, there is also a big part of the Gonzaga program that is player-centric as far as setting the example, setting the tone as an older player for the younger guys to know what it's like to be a part of that program. And I think Corey did a tremendous job of showing that. Joel Ayayi did a tremendous job of showing that. I mean, you look at Suggs bought in. He was 100% bought in. Andrew Nembhard transferred, and he bought in. You look at the two freshmen that came in highly touted, Dominic Harris and Julian Strother. Those guys bought in. They could have fractured or splintered because they didn't maybe play as many minutes as they would have liked. But you see them just as excited on the sidelines, on the bench, as any of the guys getting minutes. So I think that speaks a lot to the leadership that Corey kind of really spearheaded this year. And he's got – it might be the all-time winningest percentage. I'm not sure. But I think he's 125-11 for his career. That shows you right there. He's about winning. And he's about doing things the right way. So – you know, I was critical of a few parts of his game freshman and sophomore year. There were parts I really liked. There was a few parts I was critical of early in his career. But the growth that he showed has been awesome to watch, and I'm really happy for him. I think he's going to be a mid-first round pick, and I think he's got a chance to have a very, very lengthy and good NBA career.
Dan, let's talk about one of those blue chippers that I think will still have a bright future in this program. But I'm interested to hear your thoughts about Anton Watson, who started early in the year, was one of their key guys off the bench, showed flashes, maybe struggled a little bit in some things. What's sort of your takeaways from Anton?
Well, I think Anton's still finding his way as a college player. And a lot of times it takes more than a year or two. I mean, I look at my college experience at UW. I was up and down freshman, sophomore year. Then in my third year, I transferred to GU. I have a redshirt year. And that's where I saw tremendous growth physically, mentally in the game, and then being able to go out and execute during that redshirt year during practices where I couldn't play. And I could do that with no pressure of performing in a game. You know, unfortunately, in these day and ages, you know, you got these message boards, you got these fan bases that want a Jalen Suggs type performance right away from every freshman, but everybody's on their own kind of time frame, on their own path. I think Anton, you know, was really set back by his shoulder that freshman year. I mean, he kind of popped it out of place once or twice early in the season, and then finally he popped it out to the point where he had to have surgery. And a shoulder surgery is not easy to come back from. Any major surgery like that, yeah, you might be playing in 6 to 8 months, but structurally, it can take up to a year to be 100%. Mentally and emotionally, sometimes it can take a year or maybe more to come back from a major injury and surgery like that. I think he had great stretches this year. I think, you know, there were stretches where maybe he struggled, but I'm not concerned with Anton at all. He's a tremendous team guy. I think athletically, he's got a chance to be a 3-4 that really makes an impact next year for Gonzaga. I think, you know, for anybody out there who's kind of, you know, maybe down on his performance at times this season, my question is why? You know, I mean, he shot like 65% from the field. Yeah, he didn't shoot it great from the three-point line, but Gonzaga was outside of Kispert was not a great 3-point shooting team this year. So you can't expect everybody to knock it out of the park in all facets of the game because that's just not reasonable. But I think he's going to have a great offseason. I think he's going to have a tremendous impact on the program next year.
Yeah, with coming in and what he was asked to do this year, you know, you saw him in the tournament come off the bench and have, you know, active hands, disruptive immediately defensively. And, you know, folks who watched him dominate for several years on the statewide stage at the high school level, I like that message. Patience. We're getting there. But going forward, you know, every year, even as the table is set for to bring in another great recruiting class, you know, already landed Hunter Salas, might land Chet Holmgren. But there are plenty of Washington High School storylines on this team still. And one of those, you talk about development, you talk about, you know, biding your time and patience, is Caden Perry at Battleground, who comes in next year. What stands out? What's going to be the key, and what should fans expect from Caden?
Yeah, I think he's got a chance to have a really nice career at Gonzaga. You know, the hard thing is the bar is set so high, and people start throwing out these comparisons so early in a player's career where a player isn't able to kind of grow into them, their own skill set and their own career path. You know, people are saying Brandon Clark 2.0. Well, yeah, a lot of things he does, Brandon Clark comes to mind because of that, his athleticism above the rim, his ability to get out and transition. But that's not fair to a young kid coming in as a freshman next year. I mean, you look at it, he committed very early in the process. I mean, you know, that's one thing Coach Few and Gonzaga's coaching staff has always done a really great job of, is evaluating guys early where maybe other college programs aren't 100% sold. They see something, they like it, they go all in early. And they did that with Caden. And all of a sudden, you know, right after that, he goes on that that circuit before COVID, I think, what was it, 2 summers ago, mm-hmm. and really kind of opened a lot of eyes. And all of a sudden, he starts creeping up those rankings. So, you know, Gonzaga staff saw it early. You know, but then all of a sudden, now you are going to see a lot of expectations out of him. You know, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, where he fits alongside Ben Gregg, who now, because he graduated early from Clackamas in Portland area, and he spent the second half of the season, so he got acclimated sooner. It'll be interesting to see, you know, what happens in the transfer portal. It'll be interesting to see what Chet Holmgren decides to do if he does become a Zag. But I think that there's a tremendously bright future for Caden Perry at Gonzaga. I think he's got a great high school coach that is kind of really helped him kind of navigate the prep stuff to get ready for the next level of college, things to work on, things that maybe are secondary to work on, you know, because everybody gets these ideas in your head that, hey, he's a great athlete. He can score back to the basket. He can get on the offensive glass and finish. We need him to shoot threes now. Why? I mean, you don't have to speed up your secondary attributes too soon. He needs to focus on what is going to get him playing time early and still spend some time on those secondary attributes, but don't make that the primary focus of your workouts and what you want to be great at early on. Be great at what made you a prospect and what's going to get you playing time early, and then in your secondary time, work on those secondary attributes.
Do you think Rem Backemus is going to hold this over past Zags, former Zags teammates, winning a national championship with Baylor?
Absolutely not. I've texted with Rem quite a bit over the last couple of weeks. You know, there's one program that I wouldn't be disappointed to lose to, and that would be Baylor. And I'm being 100% honest. I like Scott Drew and the program and how he runs it. What's funny is, you know, when that Gonzaga-Baylor game was paused in December, I did a podcast with my Bulldog broadcast on Field of 68 Media Network. I did it with the guys who run the Baylor version of their podcast within that syndicate. And an hour after our podcast release came out, Scott Drew texted me, "Hey, I really like the podcast that you guys did. You covered all the bases. It was fun to listen to." And so, you know, I've had a chance to cover a couple Baylor games over the years and talk to Scott Drew. He's a great guy. I know his brother Bryce, who's at Grand Canyon, really well. It's just a great basketball family who has faith as a very strong piece of what they do personally, but within their program. And so I always pull for them. And oddly enough, after Baylor wins the game, you know, I send Scott Drew a text message, you know, after the game. Hey, congratulations. If Gonzaga was going to lose to anybody, I'm glad it's you guys, because at least there's some Gonzaga ties and Rem Backamas and John Jacobs, who was an assistant on their staff, was at Gonzaga as a director of ops before that. He texts me back at 3 a.m. our time, so 6 back in Indianapolis. Hey, thanks for the message. I appreciate it. It was so hard to beat Coach Few because he really appreciates and loves what they're doing, something along those lines. So, again, there's only one champion every single year. It happened to be Baylor. If it wasn't going to be Gonzaga, you know, I'm glad it was to a great program and a great leader of a program and coach like Scott Drew.
He's easy to root for, and that's a great story, Dan. Saw that he went individually after the mayhem settled and thanked every media member, or thanked the media for covering the game. So, you know, somebody who carries himself, you know, really well. And to be on the losing end of a bitter loss, a beatdown, and to sit there and just tip your cap and say, hey, good for you guys. It speaks volumes to that program. So lots to look forward to in the future. I'm sure that, you know, a lot of these players, particularly at the high school level, who are going to be on this stage, we will talk about a lot in the future. But for now, let's jump to a current high schooler. Gabe Johnson at Bothell joined Todd and I and talked about his development, reflected on his time now that his high school career is over after 4 games this spring season. So Gabe's a great, lively interview, Todd. I can speak for both of us when I say that we really enjoyed sitting down and getting to know him. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, Gabe Johnson joins. I want to take a moment to tell you about something really exciting for high school sports fans across the country. SB Live Sports has launched a free iPhone and Android app featuring the latest high school sports news here in Washington and across the country. With the SB Live Sports app, it's now even easier to follow your favorite team and tailor your experience to your interests. With real-time scores and news alerts, as well as video highlights, podcasts, photo galleries, rankings, game coverage, and much more, the app delivers on the content you want in one convenient place. The SB Live Sports app features exclusive content from on-the-ground reporters across the country, and it's the number one source for Washington high school sports fans, with coverage from reporters Todd Millis, myself, Andy Bueller, as well as SB Live's preeminent basketball mind and recruiting expert Dan Dickow. The SB Live Sports app is available at no charge in the Apple App Store and Google Play Store. Download it today. Excited to welcome onto the podcast a very special player from Bothell, just finished out his senior season, Gabe Johnson. Gabe, thanks for joining the podcast.
Happy to be here.
We were talking a little bit before we started recording about your history and your upbringing in sport. And it doesn't seem like, you know, I know you're going off to play college football and you've had a really nice high school career, but it doesn't seem like that's something that you were always destined for growing up.
No, not really. I've always kind of, like, I started with baseball and basketball and football. Started with all three and then kind of started weaning them out. Baseball was just way too boring for me. So I was just like, all right, I'm out of here at age like 8. And then I played junior Cougs or junior football for a couple of years and went around AAU with basketball. And then I just had some, got bored of it. We didn't love it. Would rather stay at home. So then I quit. And then my dad started guilt tripping me or manipulating me into playing sports again. My freshman year, we started with weights and then spring ball and then my freshman season and then my sophomore season, and then the rest is like history.
You know, you say words like manipulating and all that, and I'm sure your dad is going to listen to this. You know, you're playing college ball. You got to give him a little bit more credit than that.
I can't. He'll get a big head about it. So I got to keep him humble.
you grew up knowing that, you know, you were going through the Bothell program, and there's a certain tradition of playing for the Blue Train. What was your experience? What was your perception of the high school team when you were growing up?
When I was a junior Coug, I remember like looking at them and being like, oh my gosh, those are like men. Like I'm watching like the pros play right now. Like the way they just like conducted themselves and how much bigger they were than me, and seeing like, cause Coach Banner has been the coach for 21 years or whatever, and seeing his sons be like the ball boys, and like, I'll be, oh my God, I wish I was them, being around like celebrities pretty much. Oh. And like just seeing how the high school conducted themselves and how like active they were in the community, it really made me excited to play high school football when I was younger. It was a,
well, yeah. I'm sure you are probably old enough to remember the state championship run, that great team that went undefeated. What were you, sixth, seventh grade? I mean, what was it like living in Bothell at that point, just with that team heading to its first state championship for Coach Boehner?
It was kind of crazy. I remember I had a cable box with like a DVR on it, and we had that same cable box for like 4 years after the state title. We still had it recorded just to watch the game over again years later, just to say we had it. And it was just like, it's crazy. We still like talk about it so much as like a team, that about the 2014 team. It's just like amazing. Like I loved that season, that run.
Ross Bowers may as well have been Peyton Manning to you, it sounds like.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So let's kind of walk through. So you start playing your freshman year, you go off for freshman ball. And as you were saying, you get that first little taste, you get a couple sacks, you have a really nice first game. Did you come in as a high schooler knowing what position you wanted to play, or did that take some working out and feeling out, depending on, you know, growth spurts and all that?
So my brother played, he's 2 years older than me. He played receiver and DB. I forgot which one. And I was like, well, we have pretty much the same body type. I'm just going to go out for those. Well, I couldn't catch the ball and I couldn't understand coverages. So then they just like, were like, okay, go to the line. And then I started practicing with the D linemen, and I tried to stay a receiver as long as I could, but then I just kept forgetting routes and catching the ball like that. And it just wasn't a good fit. So then I got moved to O-line as well.
Jason Rimkus is your defensive coordinator. I think he came into the program. He was at another Kinko's school, but when he came into your program, he kind of told us that he called it unfairly hard on you as a sophomore. Do you remember that? Did you feel that way as you were trying to grow into a bigger role on this defense?
No. Yeah. I definitely felt that. I remember like I had my buddy next to me all the time at practice. And I'd be like, oh my gosh, did you hear the way he just said to me, I'm not coming back. I'm not coming back tomorrow. Watch me not come back. I just remember getting yelled at a lot for not doing my job, which rightfully so, but because I took a jump from C team all the way to varsity in like 1 year. I never got that like threshold period of JV. So I was just thrown right into like being yelled at all the time, and I just wasn't used to it. And I would say he yelled at me the most out of anybody on the team consistently. So
now that you look back on it, obviously you're smiling when you tell the story, but like what part has that staff at Bothell played in your development over these last couple of years?
So much. They're like my D-line coach. I've known him since I was like a young kid. He was my first football coach in like junior football. So like just having like it's a family. I've known most of the coaching staff my entire life. And so just always having that openness, be able to talk to them about whatever I need or advice about what I should do about something, or just even like watch film to help me break down film, or what I need to do more for colleges or anything like that. They've just played a huge like role in my life as like, not like father figures, but more so uncles, because I'm not really like the closest with my uncles. So it's just like a bunch of different family members I can always rely on if I need to.
So the thing that people say about you when they watch you is the motor. And I know you've been on the special teams units, you know, the leading kind of the leading guy in the punt and kickoff coverage teams for 3 years. I watched you get 2 sacks on Friday where it felt like you ran about 35 yards, but when you're watching it in real time, it felt like 10 yards. Cause you're so fast. You're so ferocious. When people say that, is that a fair characteristic in describing you? Is that how you kind of feel about yourself?
I'd say kinda more so, but when I'm on the field, I kind of shut off my mind a little bit because if I think too much, I'll play slower. So my main goal is I just kind of like go as fast as I can and try to get the play over as quickly as possible because especially this year, I wasn't as well conditioned. So I was just like, all right, get to the ball, hit him hard, call it good. And so, I mean, I'd say I'm, if you think I'm fast, hey, thank you so much. People would like to say I'm slow, but I just go wherever I need to go, when I need to go.
I want to talk about that run you guys had your junior year. You guys were, you know, a playoff team when you were a sophomore, an underclassman, but you guys make that jump as your junior year and make a great run and went through, and we'll go through it, but, you know, the teams you guys went through to get to that final, it was pretty impressive, and you were obviously battle-tested in the regular season, but did you guys notice, or did you personally notice a difference in that locker room going from a team that's a playoff team to, hey, we're a team that's going to compete for a state championship?
I did, actually. So, like, the weekend that we beat Woodinville, so the semifinals, I felt like the energy was not where it needed to be. I felt like it was like, we felt like we already won. You know, like, oh, we beat Woodinville twice. We're making it to the state championship. And I feel like the vibe, that like the anger and like the what we needed, that intensity to beat Camas, we didn't have because we fizzled out. I feel like we didn't bring that same intensity that we needed, or we didn't have that chip on our shoulder like we did against Woodinville or even Grand Kapowsin in the runner-up games. So I wish I could say that the vibe that we had was perfect and we just didn't win. They were just a better team. I don't think so. I think that they just came prepared better, like mentally, and we didn't.
In that 2019 run, who would you say, you know, we know Christian Galvin, we know Andrew Sermon, we know you, we know Jordan Turner. Who was the most unsung hero of that group?
I'd say our linebackers, honestly. We had, I think those are some of the best linebackers we've had. Like Metz, Colin Fisher Keller, Blake Bighouse, those three were just phenomenal backers, and I would put my life on the line for them. Or like, it's just, I think they didn't get enough credit where credit was due in like the media as like, and everything.
I was on the field, Gabe, after that early loss to Kennedy Catholic. I think it was a combination of being a little deflated and being really angry. What did that loss do to reshape, refocus you guys, you know, heading into a tough 4A Kinko season? Heading through a gauntlet of games, including, you know, Kentwood, Graham Kapowsin, and Woodinville again, before running into Camas.
Sorry, what's the question?
No, I said I was on the field after that loss to Kennedy Catholic in, what, week 2, week 3? And I saw a combination of kind of being deflated, but also kind of angry. How did that loss to Kennedy kind of refocus you guys, reshape you guys, especially defensively moving forward into the Kinko season and obviously the gauntlet of games in the state playoffs?
Well, I think that as a Bothell Cougar, we hate losing, but we will lose like respectfully. But I think that we kind of realized, okay, these guys, we have to do better in our passing game. And I think that game, we actually moved down one of our safeties. After that game, we moved down one of our safeties to be a D end with us. And it was Brendan Berry. And I think that we rearranged, we focused up on our strengths and we worked harder at practices. We realized, okay, what we were doing wasn't enough to beat somebody. So let's work harder as a team. Let's get our heads straight and let's go. Let's not try to lose another game.
it was clear just from a mentality standpoint, whether it's mentality or adjustments, that there was a change. Because you're right. I mean, you go and play that Kinko gauntlet, you know, that type of performance early on isn't going to cut it. What is it like playing week in and week out in the Kinko?
I like to say it's the toughest league in the state, honestly. Playing in Kinko is a dogfight just about every single game, especially against the North Creek and Woodinville and the crossover games and everything like that. I think Kinko is one of the most competitive leagues in the state, and I think that it's just an honor to be able to play in Kinko, but it is a little taxing on the body with all those big linemen and amazing athletes that we have just scattered throughout all the teams.
What do you remember about the end of the Graham Kapowsin game when they were driving a big, strong team, power running? They're about to go in and get the game-winning touchdown, and that obviously didn't happen. But what do you remember about the end of that game there in the quarterfinals?
I actually remember I was on the right side. I was going against their left tackle, and I was running, and I dipped my shoulder around the corner. I don't remember who had the ball, but someone had it, and I saw him fumble. And I was like, oh my gosh. And so I was running. I tried to get to it. And I think Blake is the one who picked it up. And he got it. And he held the ball up. And I was like, no way. It was just like the greatest feeling, one of the greatest feelings you can feel. Just like to know that you've won. Like, and it's just like, I remember just everyone hugging each other, jumping up. I got hit in the head so many times, I thought I had a concussion, honestly. Like, it was a great feeling.
You got to be careful for those injuries in the post game celebrations. They can sneak up on you. You guys finished obviously a great season, state runners up, and then the pandemic hits. And there was for a while, it didn't look like after the fall season in 2020 was postponed that you would even get the chance to play. But here you are, and here we are. You're a week removed from the season, the spring season. It was shortened. You guys ran the table in a short 4-game season. Now that you're on the other end of it, what are your takeaways of this season? How do you reflect on this spring?
I think it was definitely a strange season, but I really appreciate being able to play a season at all. It could have been longer, but if I sit there and think like that all the time, then I'm not ever going to be happy with it. And I'm just very honored that I got to play with my teammates again, whether it be 4 games or whether it be 12. I'm happy I got to see my coaches, and it's just, you can't really dwell on it wishing that it could be longer. I'm just happy that I got to play this season.
I know Luke Vinchik is a guy that people are talking about around the state. I know he's a junior. He was, I think, right next to you on that defensive line, obviously a touted offensive tackle. What do you see with him in his future, in his bright future?
Oh my, I see so much. The sky's the limit for that kid. I remember seeing him his freshman year. He was so skinny. He was probably like, because he's a little bit taller than me. I think he's like 6'5", 6'6"-ish probably. And he went from like 200 pounds to like 270. And like, while gaining weight in the season and like in the off season. And I was like, he's just a phenomenal athlete. And I'm going to miss going against him every day in pass rushing drills. He's one of the only people that could ever dupe me when we were doing them. And I think he can do so many great things.
You're headed off. At least, you know, now you've signed a letter of intent to walk on at Eastern Washington. Where are you at in that process? Are you pretty set on Eastern? And are you starting now that the season's over to prepare to head to campus in Cheney?
Moving days, I think, is August. So I'm trying to stay home as long as I can because my mom's moving to Sacramento soon. But I'm pretty intent on taking the walk on right now. There's some conversation with my parents that I have to have about reclassing for a semester to play another season. But as of right now, I start next week on getting back to the grind, to getting ready to play. So I'm wholeheartedly going into Easter right now, but if another chance happens to happen, then I'm going to take what's best for me and my family.
was there hope that with what you were able to show this spring that you could maybe turn some heads?
That was the goal. I was hoping that Eastern could see it and be like, oh shoot, maybe he is a scholarship athlete, or anyone else could see that potential in me. But I'm still waiting on that, but you know, can't really dwell on that either. I played my heart out. I had four amazing games, and if they don't want me, then I'll have to play against them and show them why, what they lost.
Well, I really admire that approach, because you're one of, you know, you're not alone in the category of you wonder what would happen if they would have had a full season. But I got to say, it stands out that you're sitting here on the other side of it, not going, you know, oh, woe is me, but, you know, hey, I'm going to take this opportunity in front of me and make the most of it.
That's interesting, Gabe. I mean, if you do look at the reclassifying option, I assume that means you'd come back and you'd play another high school season in the fall. And then everything would be on the table again. How attractive does that look to you right now?
Right now it seems pretty good, just because I'm not in the financial situation. I've seen my parents struggle that my entire life with student loans and stuff like that. So if there's a chance for me to possibly get some kind of money, then I feel like that's the best chance for me to take. I'm not really, I don't really know the best answer for that.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, right now there's a piece of legislation working its way through the state powers that be, SB 5265, I think it is, that the WIA helped write. It's a developing story, I think, that is, you know, might really change some of the decisions of people in your position if folks are able to come back. And I know the bill at least is geared toward, you know, academics. You know, hey, if you're looking to finish and you need another year, kind of a bridge year between high school and college, then here you have that opportunity. But, you know, part of that is, and I know it's kind of still being ironed out, is the athletic piece of it. So just to have that option, I mean, when did you realize that that was something that might even be on the table? And is that something that with teammates you've heard talked about?
So the first time I heard it, Coach Banner came up to me, I think after my first game, and he was like, hey, there's talk about maybe reclassing. I'm not telling you to reclass. I'm just letting you know that there's options out there if, like, I just want to be the best coach for you. And he told a couple people that, and I'm pretty sure Andrew Sermon, he's thinking about doing it, and Simon Ransom, I think he was our fullback this year. I'm not 100% sure. I think he's thinking about doing it. But other than that, I think all the other teams are just because one of my best friends, Malik, he's going to Montana Tech to play, and he doesn't really want to go through another semester again. And who else? I think that's it. I'm really tempted to do it, but again, there's just so much I have to talk to my parents about still.
It's a big decision, but it's, you know, it's one that you guys are kind of the first of this, of having to, you know, go through the process of, you know, weighing the options.
Gabe, if you do end up going to Eastern, I'm sure you're well aware of the guys that you are part of with that particular recruiting class, Shane Aliaga. I mean, there's just a really talented group of in-state guys signed in that 2021 class. What are some of your impressions about some of the guys that you would be going to Eastern with in that class?
I'm Bailey Price, the center for Woodinville, he's going there with me. So I know that he's a great athlete. He got the best of me like once or twice in our first game against him. So I know that I'm excited to go with him and have somebody I'm familiar with. I don't think I've met anyone else in person, but I've watched highlights and I've like studied up on some of them, and I'm really excited to just ball out with my classmates now. Yeah, my classmates. And they just look, I just can't wait to bond with them and meet them on like more of a personal level, see what they're like with their character and not just on film.
Wouldn't be weird going from the blue train to the red lava?
I mean, it's a little weird. I think I look good in blue, but I'm not, the red's not my shade, but I'm happy to wear it.
Well, you got a lot to look forward to in the future beyond this year. But with the rest of your senior year, what are these next couple months going to look like?
So my goal is to gain like 15 pounds before I go to college. So eat. I'm working out at FSP. So I go there to lift and do some agility stuff. I still got to finish my schoolwork. So I got to end strong. I've had issues with schooling in the past. So I'm trying to like show that that's not an issue ever. And just spend time with my mom and my girlfriend before I end up going.
Well, we wish you the best, Gabe. It's been fun watching and covering you here on the high school stage, and particularly this senior season, as short as it may have been. So thank you for joining us today on the podcast. We appreciate it.
Of course. Happy to be here.
All right, it's time for our only segment of the show. It's called Past and Present, and it's pretty cut and dry. So each one of us shouts out one current and one former Washington High School standout who caught our attention over the past week. Todd, I'm putting you on the spot. You want to do the honors? Kick us off.
Well, I'd like to shout out Jordan Spieth. He's kind of Washington's adopted son since he won at Chambers Bay, the U.S. Open here in 2015, and he finally got off the snide and won after a long drought, but I'm not going to do that. Well, actually, I just did. So, no, I'm going to go right to the women's championship game. Stanford had a few Washington players on there, but a young lady that I watched dominate the floors at the Tacoma Dome for the 3 years under, you know, our women's basketball analyst, Freddie Retko, and that's Lexi Hull. She was, again, dominant in the championship game. A really valuable performance, helping them edge Arizona in the championship in an all Pac-12 final. She was great all year. You could have put her in the conversation for Pac-12 player of the year. What a career so far, and her sister too, Lacey, who comes off the bench. But I mean, Lexi's really become a dominant force in the Pac-12. I think she has one more year to go. It's going to be interesting to see moving forward, you know, them playing as the defending national champions, but the first time. And what was it? Did I read? Almost 30 years.
Yeah.
Almost 30 years.
Same head coach. Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
30 years, in between national championships. So good for them and good for the whole sisters and Lexi. My present athlete's going to be a guy that I covered on Friday night in a Kinko 4A game. Had a really good career. Didn't put up gaudy numbers like Sam Heward or Clay Millen, but Andrew Sermon, he's just a winner. He just gets it done, whether he has to, you know, plow through the middle of a line for a 7-yard run at quarterback, or, you know, making a key pass. You know, a lot of guys, I think, in their senior year, their last game, would say, hey, coach, let me go out, you know, in blaze of glory. Let me throw for 300. Let me throw for 400. I think he threw for less than 100 yards. It wasn't part of the game plan against Woodinville. He just ran it. They were able to come back, beat Woodinville, finish 4-0. We talked to Gabe Johnson a little bit about that win, and guy's a winner, and it's going to be interesting to see what he does. He's a kid that should be playing for money on Saturday somewhere, and it'll be interesting to see what his future brings.
All right, I'll jump in. You know, you beat me to the punch on the Stanford women's team winning a national championship, but I have to stay with the Hull sisters. Freddie Retko, who's been our kind of high school girls basketball analyst here in the state, I've gotten to know him well. He always talked so unbelievably highly about the Hull sisters, their IQ for the game of basketball, their athleticism, their skill, their leadership, their competitiveness, and to see them both be a big part of a championship at the college level is pretty cool to see. So I got to stay right there with you. I can't go in any other direction. And for present athlete, you know, I'm on the north side of Spokane, Mount Spokane High School. They had a kicker. I believe Ethan Mikulski is his name. 3 field goals in a victory. And one of those field goals, 55 yards. I don't think you're going to see a lot of NFL kickers knocking one through the uprights from 55 yards out. So that's pretty impressive. I'm going to have to stay on the east side of the state for my 2 picks.
Well, it's well deserving, and if you want to see that field goal, it was came in the top two of SB Live's top 10 plays of the week. So head to the site, scorebooklive.com/Washington, the SB Live sports app, to watch that. It's truly amazing. And a rivalry game, Battle of the Bell, nonetheless. So big win. All right, I'll round us out, guys. So I'll start with past. His name's already been mentioned, but my past Washington High School athlete is Rem Backamus, all-leaguer at Mark Morris, walk-on at Gonzaga, a part of that Gonzaga 2017 title contending team. And now in his third year as a grad assistant at Baylor, he wins the title against his own Zags. And it's a great story. There was a story that Jordan Nalen wrote in the Longview Daily News about Rem, if you haven't already checked that out. But I can't believe I would even go through his resume without mentioning that between high school or between college and his current job, he worked here at SB Live. So SB Live's own, that counts as a ring. I don't know if we get a ring, if we get a trophy, but an honorary one for sure. So,
hey, it's not 6 degrees of separation for our title. It's like one.
That's right. That's right. For present, Ryan Black of Glacier Peak. Todd, you mentioned Andrew Sermon, and I think Ryan Black fits in sort of a similar mold of guys who had really nice springs, and for Andrew, had a really nice high school career, and maybe don't have the college options that they want, and glaringly so is the case with Ryan Black, and he has a couple of offers at smaller schools, but you listen to that whole Glacier Peak staff go, where the heck are the options for this kid? Against Lake Stevens, he had 359 rushing yards, touchdown after touchdown, one bruising run after another. And Todd, you were there. You covered this. I just watched the game off the live stream. But the way that defenders bounce off this guy is just unbelievably entertaining to watch. And he doesn't, have a D1 offer. He doesn't, I don't think, have a D2 offer. And had a phenomenal season for Glacier Peak. They challenged for Lake Stevens 4A Wesco Throne, and they got probably as close as anyone has in recent memory, although Lake Stevens pulled away. But it's tough because, were there to have been a fall season, he's been, probably the most productive running back in the state on paper. And if you need proof, watch the highlights on the site. Watch this guy's huddle. So Ryan Black, Todd, you co-signed that selection?
Yeah, and it's a travesty that he hasn't been offered a scholarship at any level. Hope that changes here pretty soon.
Absolutely. Well, thank you guys for being here. It's been another fun week, and we'll be back next week. For SB Live Washington and SB Live Sports, I'm your host, Andy Bueller. They are Todd Millis and Dan Dickow. We will be back next week. This podcast is brought to you by SB Live Washington and SB Live Sports, your national hub for high school sports news and information. Subscribe for free wherever you get podcasts. If you do it on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a rating and a review to help us best serve you, the listener. You can find our website at scorebooklive.com/Washington. There you'll see news, features, highlights, podcasts, and everything in the world of high school sports across this state. As always, a big shout out to our sponsor, Washington Federal. Thanks to Dan Dickow and Todd Millis for bringing the heat every week. This song you're hearing is by the band Woodrow. It's called So Far Away. It's written by James Schroeder, Carl Johnson, and my dad, Matt Bueller. I'm Andy Bueller. We'll be back next week.